Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Happy Easter. Holy Saturday, the day after Good Friday. Christ is risen. What this should mean to your health. I'm going to draw, as always, from parallel universes to make hopefully a coherent point to you in your quest for radiant health or in your journey out of disease. What does this have to do with the resurrection? I think it has everything to do with the resurrection. The resurrection of Christ, a point we won't belabor. We are all aware of this as Christians. Picture number one. Go to picture number one. Let the pictures tell the story. The life of Jesus Christ. If you're new to the show, get to the website straighttalk.cc, not .com, .cc with two T's. Go to the website. If not, just imagine the agony in the garden, the night before the crucifixion. This is an artist's rendition of it. I want you to take a look. And of course, these renditions change throughout the centuries. 900 A.D., 1,000, 1,100, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400. The Renaissance, post-Renaissance, contemporary. Fascinating to look at the world's version of the life of Christ and his sufferings, his agonies, over the millennia. And those artists presenting a different slant as the consciousness of the cultures changed. By the time we get to the Renaissance, Jesus was a muscular man dying on the cross. Far, far different in contrast to that two-dimensional flat image of the Middle Ages. Take a look at picture number one. There's Christ in the agony of the garden. Keep in mind, this has everything to do with your health. And I'll draw the relationship shortly. Your disease. And I'll draw the relationship shortly. To me, it's what Easter should include to you. Part of how you should see it in your life, I offer you today. There's a man, a gifted man, who is God, but also man. Born gifted, paranormal, of course. Wise enough to hold the attention of the highest legions of religion of his time. And yet, at the relatively young age of 33 years old, finds himself in a garden at the foot of Mount Zion, Mount Olive. That garden at the foot of Mount Olive in Jerusalem, I believe. He finds himself contemplating the torture he is about to endure. And I don't think it's presumptuous to say that as man, in that he suffered, this is Jesus as man at the moment. The God in Jesus is not suffering because he is above that, because his faith is so great. But this is the man suffering. Thus the artist's rendition of the angel appearing to Jesus. Did the angel appear, or did Jesus call upon the heavens? I ask you, is it consistent with the meaning of Christ that that angel would appear, or is it more consistent with the meaning of Christ as it relates to your disease today, your symptom, the rut you're in? the trap, the middle age menopause. No, I mean the one that at 50 or 60 makes you ask yourself or makes you consider the number of mistakes you've made, the amount of forgiveness you've had to find for yourself, and asks you what the next 20 or 30 years will be like. In that moment, in that agonizing moment, I'm going to suggest to you that through an act of faith, through a trained, deliberate, skillful, paranormally efficient act of faith, he calls upon the heavens to materialize his help. That's not a wish. That is an act of faith. That angel sits there in result to Christ's act of faith. He is lost. He is afraid. He knows what's going to happen to him. And he is asking himself, and again, I emphasize, this is not too presumptuous on my part to suggest that he is asking himself, amidst everything that I've been given, why do I have to suffer for them? Why do I have to die for their sins? I would ask you to interpret that as, why do I have to suffer to offer them a future and the possibility of eternity, of getting on the other side of their hang-ups, of their petty, stupid, moronic little addictions, their vices, their illnesses, their insanities, their weaknesses? Why do I have to suffer to offer them a possibility of getting on the other side of that, of transcending that? Why do I have to go through this act? And he asked for faith. He asked for help. And because he was skilled, because he was transcendent, because he was accomplished, because he had trained himself, don't you think it's reasonable? Doesn't it give it more meaning? If Christ evolved over those 33 years, in that we are being offered a template, we as humble humans are being offered a template, a relationship with something we can relate to so that we can deal with our pain. So there's that angel in the agony of the garden. And Christ has a choice. And that choice in the garden of, it's Gethsemane. Gethsemane. Don't correct me, please, if I didn't say that right. I'll figure it out eventually myself. He, in fact, has a free choice. And what does he choose to do? He chooses to absorb his beating. Because only then can he transcend. And that's the thing. You watch people when they're sick. You watch people when they have a symptom. And what do? They fight it. They fight it. I don't want to be sick. This shouldn't have happened to me. I shouldn't be going blind. I shouldn't be growing a brain tumor. I shouldn't be out of work for 6 months because of my back pain. I shouldn't have sagging skin. My buttocks shouldn't be dropping a millimeter or two and showing ugly lines. I shouldn't be on the toilet for an hour or two in the morning because my friends are out playing tennis and I'm trying to have my bowel movement. I shouldn't have the flu. I shouldn't have to spend all this money on my health. That's what people do. And that's what people do over trivia. Trivia. Low back pain is trivia. Unless, of course, you had it to the point where you want to blow your brains out. And I've certainly seen that occasionally. But by and large, most people's aches and pains and symptoms and this and that and the other thing, they're trivia. a good tour to the Middle East, a good tour to some of the countries of Africa or South America would remedy most people's temper tantrums at what they endure. But this isn't my point. My point is, people stamp their feet. It's the first great, great mistake you make. And you say you don't, but you do. And that's what it is to be human. And that's why the agony in the garden is such an important thing to take a look at. Because Jesus, who is certainly God, who certainly rose from the dead, I'm a literalist. If you say to me, Moses lived to 900, I believe Moses lived to 900. I don't believe that they didn't count right back then. I don't believe that the translations are off. I believe he lived to 900. So if you tell me Christ rose from the dead, if that's what the New Testament states, I believe he rose from the dead, and he appeared in flesh. Now to do that, you have to pass through go. Because if Jesus was to spend his evening stamping his feet about what he was going to do, I assure you there would be no resurrection. And see, this is my point today. What does Christ and the resurrection have to do with your health? Everything. Because that last week, and especially those last few days, are templates for you and for me and for all of us and for the world, so that they can understand how to deal with their pain. And this is what it comes down to. I really don't want to discuss this. I have, and maybe that's my own temper tantrum, a real distaste for having to do this as a doctor. I do. I really don't want to hear about your problems. A part of me is so uninterested. What a terrible thing to say. I'm interested in science. I'm interested in how your heart's working and how it's reflexing to your intestines. I'm interested in the scientist. I'm interested in the cell, in the biology of the cell. But I'm interested in delivering to you a service. And that service is about teaching you how to journey through the cells of your diseased or symptomatic organ so that you can transcend it and expand and find out before you die what you came here to do. And as much as I'm interested in it, I always run smack into the middle of your temper tantrum. Now, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Yeah, it's about that. We're human. We are human. So you have to be patient. There's no two ways about that. You have to be patient to a point. So there's the agony of the garden. Now, from the agony of the garden to the crucifixion to the resurrection. Go to picture number 3. Just take a moment. Agony in the Garden, Franz Schwartz. I don't know who Franz Schwartz is other than an artist. But look at that one. Look at that rendition. A little more chilling, don't you think? Look at picture number 2. I don't even know who did that one. That's some darn good graffiti. No, it's not. That's another rendition. Why is Jesus always hugging an angel? Why are they depicting that? And is that a man angel or a woman angel? Well, I don't know. I'm sure there are opinions out there, but the point is, we all have to draw upon something as a source of faith if we're going to transcend. I want you to hold that, because I'm going to make a claim to you. The Jesus story is a template for us, right? No one's going to argue that in their right Christian mind. But I want to turn that into something even more relevant than, as far as I'm concerned, I normally hear explained. So let's just understand a few things. Christ is super gifted. Christ is about to be crucified. He knows it's going to happen. He has a good idea of what it entails. And in that agony, in the Garden of Gethsemane, he calls upon the heavens. Now, I believe that literally. Do you? If you were watching Jesus that night, if you were there, I mean, don't you wish you could be there? Would there be nobody there? Would that just be like blank? And this is just the projection of our infantile imagination, so we can make some sense out of it. Well, I don't believe that. I believe that there are angels, and I believe you can call upon them. And I believe if you're really good at it, you are living your faith. I also believe, and I'll argue to you, that you have to be connected to your body to do this. Now, that's an indictment. Gotta be careful here, Medici. That's an indictment. I think if you're looking for an experience of faith, you have to go inside your body. If you're looking up and out and into the heavens at the expense of your sacrum, and your vagus nerve, and your pituitary, and your pineal, and your hypothalamus, and your ventricular system, and your vagus nerve, I think you're a little delusional. Wow. Well, there you go. Now I've dropped the bomb. You're delusional. No, I'm not lecturing you. I'm beseeching you to understand that it just might be that people back then, that the part of Christ that was man was guided by the part of Christ that was God. The part of Christ that was man was guided by the part of Christ that was God, so that the body could sustain the miracles. And so it is with the saints. And so it is with some of the people we've called mystics. And so it is with a body of people who know God in their being, because their being, their soma, their heart, their liver, their spleen, their skin is alive. Like children. Like children. Unpolluted. Pure. And palpitorily, physically manifesting proof of the statement. In contrast to people who pray from the neck up, who talk, in the Christian community, we are all quick to look at people who we get the certain sense only taken in cerebrally. And I'm asking you to consider that there's a little bit of that in all of us, you and me and everybody, because that's what it is to be human. But I'm also asking you to consider that your way out of this is through the body. You might say, I got to pray a little harder. And I might say to you, you got to stretch a little deeper. You have to stretch a little more efficiently. What will you do tomorrow to celebrate Easter? What will you do? Well, you'll go to church. You'll read verse. You'll be with family. And at the end of the day, let me ask you, will you be closer to you or further away? Now, I'm going to ask you to consider that there's something called a practice, a practice. And a practice is something you do every single day to get closer to you. And those are not a bunch of empty words. There is a physiological shift as we initiate different sets of systems that God gave us. And if we're really good at that, that physiological shift is drastic. It is manifesting It is capable of doing things that aren't what we call human. And I'm suggesting to you that if you take that out of the ordinary, extracurricular, demonstration of those centers of being, those systems that you can ignite within yourself, ventricular system, the autonomic nervous system, the hypothalamus pineal system. If you ignite these systems, you will begin to experience yourself as a body of light. That doesn't mean you're going to resurrect from the dead. That just might mean we've taken that great little leap into deciding that we are God and not just born in his likeness. But nonetheless, I can assure you that the act of faith, the ability to bring something into your being, to bolster you through the storm, is the result of a practice. Now that should expand your present definition of the word prayer. If you're praying from the neck up, well, you'll get from the neck up of a response. And I think that's unnecessarily short of what you want. And I'm suggesting to you that when you can materialize an angel, you know what you're doing. And that's the point. Jesus Christ knew what he was doing. He was sublime. And he played out the man part of himself, which must have been, quite frankly, a bore. He played out the man part of himself so we could look at the God and the man and relate and yet keep ourselves humble so that we could navigate ourselves with clarity through our own mess. Now, you have to have some understanding of this the day you've got a tumor, the day you're up for surgery, the day they want to cut your gallbladder out, the day they want to replace your knee, the day you find out a loved one is going to die. You got to have an understanding of this, or you'll be swept away. The devil will eat you. Because there is a devil. And the effect of that demonic energy, we feel from time to time, bad feeling, bad feeling. And to be left without a foundation of strength when the devil's about to eat you is not a good feeling. And that brings us back to the word practice. What is your practice? So that you can live more transcendent, more on the side of resurrection. Now, I know someone in the audience is thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? If you're new to the show, you have a right to ask that question. If you're not new to the show, then you just want to give me a heart attack. Whereupon there'll be no more straight talk on health. Because you can't possibly be asking yourself, what does he mean by a practice? I've given you 202 hours of a practice. And each show, each hour, over 3 years now, each hour, over 3 years, I'm finishing the third year, we're starting the fourth year in about a month. I think it was April 12th of 2012. So I think we're starting the fourth year. You have 200 hours. Over a wide diversity of information, all of which come together to ask you to do, to feel yourself. Because you can't transcend, you can't resurrect, you can't really effectively, as far as I'm concerned, watching people. Remember, I'm the guy that sits here, that listens to all those stories. You don't tell anybody. You don't tell your husband, you don't tell your wife, you don't tell your kids, you don't tell your friends. I'm like the stranger on the train, right? you know, the stranger on the train, you just sit down and you have this conversation that you know is going to end. And you're never going to see that stranger again because he's going to North Dakota and you're going to Atlanta, Georgia. But it's comfortable. But it kind of works. And there's nothing else to do anyway. In fact, you're just trapped in that seat. So you start talking, and before you know it, everyone's had one of these, right? If you travel, you understand what it is to dip your toe into the cosmic river, have the mystic journey, where you just meet someone that you feel like you know, but you don't know them, and you never see them again. Maybe they're an angel. But you talk to them. You tell them things you never told anybody. And you're never going to tell anybody again, but you got to tell somebody, and you've decided this is the time. That's what it's like to be a doctor, if you know what you're doing. And I'm saying to you from my vantage point that you've got to embrace my big picture here to get out of the hole that you're in, the hole that you pretend you're not in, the one that the face you wear denies even exists. And yet, 2 o'clock in the morning with your panic attack, or 4 a.m. or 5 a.m., the real you with the makeup off, naked in front of the mirror, the breakfast table. Yeah, that you, the way that you feels, the way out of that, you have to embrace this. And if you're dealing with a symptom, if you're dealing worse yet with a disease, you got to get on that. And yet, you've got the story of Christ. And this is what you're celebrating. If you've got any good sense, what you're celebrating tomorrow is the fact that somebody else that had enough man in him for you to relate to got out of his hole. Because it really doesn't get worse than crucifixion, last time I looked. And that's the celebration. Now, what to do about it? Well, that's about developing a practice of health. You know, some people say, and I won't get into this because there's always some reverend in the audience that went to Harvard or whatever that considers this grossly agnostic, you know, the occult Christians, the ones that don't know anything, that have an opinion a little bit different than the common opinion, and they're occult and agnostic, and they're going to burn in hell. You know, it's one thing to be a non-believer, it's another thing to pervert the common belief system. Agnostic Christians. So I don't want to get too much into this, because I'm not agnostic. I'm not anything. I'm what I think is the truth. And no one's going to tell me otherwise. Nobody. So if you can relate to that, there are some people that think that Jesus came from the sect of Jews called the Essenes. You know, like Essene bread. And if you study the Essenes, now this part is history, so you can't argue with this, whether Christ was an Essene or he studied with the Essenes or he trained with the Essenes, isn't the point. The point is that some people suggest that Jesus went through a training, or that he was part of a group that he was infinitely more advanced than, but that he was part of a group. He came from, well, he certainly wasn't born a Pharisee. And the other group, the Sadducees, if that's the way you say it, I don't know. But then where was he from? Well, a lot say the Essenes. The Essenes had a practice. The Essene lifestyle is known. It's delineated. It's been studied. It's been written about. And they had a practice. They were some of the earliest groups to actually do enemas. They were very much at one with the land. They had extremely well-developed practices of health. They were healthy people. They weren't Epicurean. They weren't the gluts. And this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that what we have to consider today, especially, is that the cultures out of which Scripture derives across the board. I'll extend the statement to across the board throughout the whole world, from wherever Scripture derives itself from, came out of cultures that had practices. Our practice is up at six, in the car, to work, to be beaten like slaves without enough time to exercise, in little computer-ridden, fluorescent-lit cells, back into traffic, at home, stuff toxic food into your face, go to sleep, wake up, Saturday for chores, Sunday for a little family, back to the grind, hope the IRA account doesn't go kerplunk, and hope I can get out of this by 60. That's our practice. You got to think about that one tomorrow, because here's one thing you're buying yourself, if that's your practice. No chance of redemption. No chance of resurrection. Yes, we're going to have a few miracles. The Lord will grant some of us miracles. I like the old axiom, God helps those who help themselves. I ain't hanging out in the street. And I'm not criticizing you if you are. But for me, I like God helps those who helps themselves. And what I'm saying, without a practice, I don't see how you're going to get out of the hole. And if you're locked into that 9-to-5 routine I just described, what are you going to do? Pray blindly? Okay. I'm sure we'll see a few miracles. I think it's dangerous. I don't think it's vigilant or prudent is the word, to bank on a miracle when you might be taking real strong steps to do for yourself, to take the plunge. If underneath it all, you've got to take the plunge, if you feel you've got to take the plunge but you're scared, well, meet Christ. So he takes the plunge. And off that plunge, now we get some neat pictures. We get some really neat pictures. Picture number 10. This is Rubens. Go to picture number 10. That's Rubens. I think Rubens was Dutch, right? Picture number 10. Take a look at that. Love that use of color. Imagine catching that one stormy day. Look at that. He's ascending. Look at picture number 9. He's resurrecting. He's being reborn. He's muscular. This is a little more 3D in it, so it must have been a little bit out of the Middle Ages in the transition. He's got some muscle on him. Look at that picture. He's done it. He's reconfigured. He's turned dead flesh into light. He's performed the ultimate magic trick, the one of all time, to atomize his body. And then, of course, he comes back, picture number 11. This is Caravaggio. Picture 11. Who's that sticking his finger in his rib? Right? Who's that sticking his finger? Caravaggio could paint. Could he not paint? Look at that picture. Look at the faces on those disciples. And of course, we know that is Doubting Thomas. Look at Caravaggio catching everything, the lines in his forehead. I'm not sure, so don't start throwing stones, but didn't he end up crucified in India or something? Didn't he travel to foreign lands and ended up upside down and crucified in India? Something like that. Look at Doubting Thomas sticking his fingers into Christ's ribs because he can't believe Jesus has come back. He can't believe his own eyes. Nah, that wouldn't be you. You wouldn't do that. You'd look at Jesus resurrected and you'd immediately say, of course, I knew that was going to happen all along. I knew I saw him a few days earlier, blood and guts spewing all over the street. Thorns, picks in him. I knew this would happen. I don't have to check that. No, Thomas is one of the disciples. And he's basically saying, okay, here's where the rubber hits the road, man. I'm a scientist. I'm sticking my finger in. I got to see if that's flesh or I'm hallucinating. What a picture, huh? What a picture. Even when you perform miracles, most people are just going to look at you and say, you're scamming. If your own disciple's going to do it, what about the rest of the crowd? There it is. How are you going to ever get out of the hole you're in without your family judging you, without your husband pounding down on you? This stuff is nutty. Anything outside of nuts and bolts is nutty. And a guy named Jesus that gets crucified and rises from the dead a few days later, that atomizes to a body of light, and yet he's completely flesh? Come on. I didn't send my kids to Harvard Medical School to believe in that hooey. It's always the people closest to you in the end. They're the ones you remember, because they're the ones that mean something. And there he is, doubting Thomas. How many of you have been collapsed in your life at one point or the other because you've been betrayed by judgment, slander, and other people doubting the glory of you? How many? Well, there it is. And this is the thing about the story of Christ. If you sit back and reflect every step of the way, the story of Christ is saying to all of us, he went through it, and look what he did, and you at least got a piece of him. You're not him, but you got a piece of him. So why not take a hint? Now, this is what I can tell you as a doctor. All right? Let's just say I was not a believer, which is not the case, but let's just say I wasn't. Let's say I was absolutely neutral on this whole subject. All I can tell you is I was led to the veracity, the truth in the things I've said to you today about the story of Christ and illness by watching people who heal. That's how I got there. Christians often come in here and they ask me if I'm a believer. You know, they kind of look at me. Are you a believer? Because if you're not a believer, I don't know why I'm sitting here. And I tell them a few stories. And then they shut up. They really just shut up. And they should shut up. You see? Because they ought to know. If they weren't so in their head. You see? You can tell a man of faith. And you ought to be doing that long before he asks you. But this is the whole point. Everybody's going to go through this judgment, this doubting. And if you're on the receiving end of it, you have to understand that this is when you got your thunder stolen. Someone stole your thunder, your creative force. So now I'm shifting the conversation a little bit. I'm saying you were born with creative force, as Jesus was, and you were condescended, you were slandered, you were betrayed, you were whatever you were. And in your 40s and in your 50s, as your disease manifests and you realize you are going to perish without ever knowing why you came here, you take one great leap forward, only to find the people closest to you are trying to rip out your organ systems. And that's doubting Thomas. Your husband is doubting Thomas. Or your wife is doubting Thomas. Or your neighbors. Or your fellow churchgoers. And while everybody is saying yes, 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 and yes, in the moment, it becomes no. Thomas didn't doubt before that day. Thomas needed the resurrection to begin to doubt. You have to understand that. That is not a small point. He was okay with the crowd. He was okay with being subversive. He was okay with all these miracles. But when this comes down the pipe, he's like, whoa, I know I'm going to end up upside down, naked, and crucified in some swamp in India a number of years later. So Bottom line is, I got to get this one straight. And that's what happens. When the stakes go up, that's when you get stuck. Back to picture number one. There it is. Look at picture number one. How do you derive your faith? You have to have a practice. And thus my point. Now, in the time remaining, from a psychiatric standpoint, I want to throw you a name. And then from a historical standpoint, I want to throw you another name. These are large names to me. One guy is a guy named John Perakos. Go to picture number 14. It's John Perakos. He was a protege of none other than Wilhelm Reich, who was a protege of none other than Sigmund Freud. You got to understand, these are medical doctors who do a religious thing in the sense of they listen to other people who are in great physical and emotional pain and try to help them. That is a life of giving. Now, we may have perverted this in America. We may have perverted this in America to being a doctor. To being a doctor is not about helping others. It's about buying a mansion. But really, when you consider what it is to say, I'm going to help another human being and make a good living, albeit it is an act of giving. It's an act of generosity. And Perakos was a classic example of that. As a psychiatrist, he was willing to listen to the worst of it. And he ended up writing a book called Core Energetics. So go to picture number 13, Core Energetics. And Core Energetics was about people and their attachment to pain. So go to picture number 17. Picture number 17. And you can blow that up, Control Plus, or however you're going to enlarge a picture. And it talks, picture 17, about sources of attachment. And it says the attachment to pain is embedded in the human entity during the early childhood experiences when feelings and sexuality are inhibited by parents and society. So there they go, those psychiatrists. Get on that sexual thing immediately. Messed up sexual identity, the cause of all pain. Okay, they're shrinks. But the point is, anybody in the psychoanalytic society, in other words, you go to your priest, or your reverend, or your shrink. Those are the people that hold space for people in psycho-emotional torment. Point being, disease derives out of that. And Perakos, as a shrink, as a body-centered shrink, goes right to this notion of pain. Now look at picture 18. Go to picture 18. You want to blow that up. Get it a little bigger. I'm going to read it to you. Right where on picture 18 you see that little red arrow. The medicine for the pain then is to feel the pleasure. But this is difficult. Even if the pleasure is there, people cannot avail themselves of it because they do not believe they deserve it. You see, this is where the, oh, Lord, I am not worthy thing gets misinterpreted. Oh, Lord, I am not worthy that you should come to me. I remember being in Catholic school as a kid singing that, shouting it. And I think that's a misinterpretation. Because what that does, and you can all relate, like, you should be happy there's any food on the plate because there's kids starving in Africa, so eat it all. We all grow up with these little statements from the elders that tell us to just shut up and suffer. Because they know suffering and success, suffering and socialization, suffering in life have a relationship, and they're doing their best to give you their version of that relationship. But I'm saying to you, if that relationship gets a little perverse and you end up with a symptom, you end up with a disease, underneath the herbs and the cleanses and the rest of it, sooner or later, there's a medicine for you. And that medicine is about feeling pleasure in your body. But this is difficult. Even if the pleasure is there, people cannot avail themselves of it because they do not believe they deserve it. And that really is where those verses I quoted a moment ago have destroyed you. There is a masochism that you develop within yourself. And that masochism can block those opiate receptors. This is not a small thing. This is a big thing. That masochism, that inability to feel pleasure in your body. You see? Now, if you're going to misunderstand that, you're going to say carnal pleasure, promiscuous, pornographic pleasure. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that really good feeling that comes from exercising your body. I don't mean, Jacqueline, exercising. I mean the things you do. Cleansing, stretching, running, touching. I mean when you take the practice of health to the point where something within you begins to flow. And I don't think anybody's termed this phenomenon better than people outside the Christian segment. I would call it the halo around the head, but I don't know a better word out there circulating in society outside of saying prana, chi, the bioelectric force, universal life intelligence. And I don't think the word you attach to this is important. I think having the experience of something moving in your body that makes you feel really good. Again, this is where you lose people, so don't be lost. When Parakos is saying the medicine for the pain then is to feel the pleasure, you're talking about an organic, visceral, palpable, articulable feeling that today we encapsulate into words like prana. Chi. Every culture had a version of how to explain this, but it's pleasurable. Now, Candace Pert, a name I give you very often, Candace Pert said that that feeling of some electrical force moving through your body, which I would offer you the Christian artists, the Catholic artists, the church, over the centuries, has materialized as the halo. I would offer you that the materialization of this pranic force, of this electrical field, is the halo. And that some people were of such pure nature, of such pure, simple lifestyle, of such egoless daily practice, of such internal generosity that their energy just flew with greater power. Thus the halo. And that is a life of pleasure. And this is what Parakos is saying can't happen when the fixation is on the pain. And this is my point. In the agony in the garden, in your personal agony in your garden, there is a fixation on the pain. You're resisting something. You're stamping your feet about something. And on the other side of that is the foundation for pleasure. The exercises of health work if the perspective is correct. Your personal resurrection above the disease to radiant health without symptomology will occur. The herbs will work. The stretches will work. When deep down inside, the body accepts its place and moves forward. Now, what systems within. What systems within are we talking about? Well, go to picture number. Go to picture number. Let's do this. Go to picture number. Hang on 1 second. Did we not have that? Excuse me. I have to just reset the computer. There we go. Go to picture number 25. Go to picture number 25. And take a look at picture 25. It's the pineal gland. Look at that. Look at that pineal gland. Look at the picture on the right where it says pituitary gland and pineal gland. Look at the art of that. Look at picture 27. The ventricular system of the brain. Pumping like a heart. Pumping hard like a heart. Moving cerebrospinal fluid. In varying degrees. Not everybody does it the same. Look at picture number 29. Look at picture 29 labeled there. Go to the left side, the third one down, pineal gland. Look at that little gland in between the colliculuses of the midbrain. That same pineal gland, known as the third eye. Picture 26. As we light up the brain. As we light up the brain, could it be through some systematic practice, through some commitment in lifestyle, that these centers of your anatomy change the way you experience life? That they give you abilities? That they create a foundation through which you can ask for guidance and receive it? Some intensification of that process? Or do you really think if you're obese, if you're toxic, if you haven't moved your body in 20 years, do you really think you're going to be just as capable? And this is my point. There may be that the Jesus story had the success it had and thus changed and shook the entire world to this date is very related to perfection of an internal practice. Now, what does that have to do with your symptom and your disease? You're going through the same thing. Look at what Loyola said. Ignatius Loyola. Look at what Loyola said. Let's talk about Ignatius Loyola. Picture number 24. Ignatius Loyola, if you don't know who that is, was a Spanish Catholic playboy who had part of his leg blown off during one of the Crusades and who had the Saul become Paul moment in a cave as he prostrated himself for his sins. Ignatius Loyola founded the Jesuits. Ignatius Loyola changed the world. I went to Jesuit schools, Fordham University, Georgetown. Go forth and set the world on fire, Ignatius Loyola. Point being, light up. Light up those internal centers. Look at Loyola and his perception of pain. Picture 22. Picture 22. If God sends you many sufferings, it is a sign that he has great plans for you and certainly wants to make you a saint. 1491 to 1556, just at the beginning of the Renaissance, those critical years, early Renaissance. Point being, there's a relationship between that agony in your personal garden and God talking to you. Now, what Loyola did that's fascinating to create the Jesuit order is he had his Jesuits perform. Go to picture 19. Picture number 19. the Stations of the Cross. To become a Jesuit, you had to enact the Stations of the Cross. To become a Jesuit, you had to go through every Station of the Cross and live it. You had to live it. And Loyola designed this to create a complete and total transformation, a neurological shift that would turn you into a complete and total Jesuit so that you could go forth and set the world on fire. In other words, Loyola's process went to the body. Now, this is what Paracco is saying. Go to picture 15. Look at Paracco. So I'm drawing parallels. Picture number 15, Paracos is saying, the truth is in the body, the truth of history, the truth of the soul, and then so on and so forth. Again. And this is what Easter is to me. It's a reminder to take the inward journey, to bolster yourself so that your faith can set the world on fire. So that you can bring yourself to your own personal resurrection. And if you simply consider what you've been given and what's inside you, the systems, the magnificent systems designed to enable you to facilitate that transformation, then you rest easy in the name of God. That's what I've come to increasingly in my practice. And I share that with you on this day. So happy Easter. God bless you. Have a great day today and tomorrow and always. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.